this is about you taking radical responsibility for changing you. And so when you're stuck, it might feel like you don't have any power, like you don't have any choice, like you don't have any control, just like you're just there and just things are happening around you and you wish that you could control them. But the problem with that is actually that you're looking at things you can't control and wishing you can control them, and you're missing, as I did, the fact that the thing that I can control is me.
The Happy Healthy Human podcast will help you build your happy, healthy life. Your host, Paul Levitin, is a board-licensed health and wellness coach, nutrition coach, personal trainer, and behavior change specialist with over 10 years of experience helping people create positive life change. Each week, he discusses topics that will help you understand yourself, why you do the things you do, and how to take steps to create the life of your dreams. He talks with experts from therapists to addictions counselors, coaches, trainers, CEOs, financial planners, and more. If you've ever wondered how can you become the best, happiest, healthiest version of yourself, you've come to the right place.
Christy Holt is a self-proclaimed happiness hussy, and she hosts a podcast called Create Your Happy, Inspiration for Conscious Women, which I've linked in the show notes below. She's also an international best-selling author of the book Unstuck for Women, as well as the Unstuck Journal, which are both great resources for women and men, as Christy and I discuss in the episode. Christy loves to show people how to get out of survival mode so that they can consciously create the happy life, relationships, and impact they desire. This is one of those recordings where I just couldn't stop nodding my head as Christy was speaking. Christy is a person who just gets it. And in this episode, she drops so many knowledge and wisdom gems. You might want to have a pen and paper ready because this one is a game changer. With that being said, enjoy this conversation with Christy Holt. What does it mean to create your happy?
Oh, that's such a good question and I'm actually going to start with what I think a lot of people think happiness is, so that we can get clarity on what happiness is before we dive into how to create that. Because if we're talking about different things, then the rest of it might not make sense. So in my perspective, happiness is actually an emotion that you feel on the inside. It's something that comes from within that alters the perspective of the experiences that you're having of the world around you. So to me, happiness is not something that I chase outside of myself that makes me feel good temporarily. That is many people's definition of happiness. But what I've discovered is that there is a greater version of happiness available, and it's actually one that comes from within ourselves. And that the more we create this happiness within ourselves, the more we experience so-called happy experiences in our external reality. So how do we create this happiness within? Well, the truth is, it's our intended state. It's our natural state of being to be happy. And things that are getting in the way, the things that are interfering, often uncomfortable emotions or unpleasant circumstances. And I'll point out that uncomfortable and unpleasant are merely our judgments of what is. And so if we can really be aware of our perspective and how that plays in, we can really free ourselves from a lot of things that feel not great to us and allow them to just be part of our experience without resisting or clinging to them. And when we can let go of attachment to having things go our way and meeting our preferences all of the time, we can actually learn to live in this base state, this natural state of feeling happy all of the time. And to me, that is probably easier said than done, I will say, for most of the listeners out there. But for me, that has absolutely changed my entire experience here, living in this human meat suit, by changing my perspective.
Very well said. And you mentioned discomfort and different things like that. And you said that these are more judgments that we put on things. So yeah. I'm curious, aren't some things actually uncomfortable? Aren't there sometimes that's just the reality of the situation? So how do we get ourselves away from that when there are some things that aren't subjective, but are objectively negative?
Yeah. And I mean, of course, life is full of chaos and challenges, and the way that we look at them and deal with them has a significant impact on our quality of life. So this is something that is really worth looking into. So when we're experiencing things that are maybe difficult or uncomfortable, we have a couple of options. And I'll tell you what the default mode is. The default mode is probably to feel deeply, to then your mind will hop in and tell you a whole bunch of stories about that that will be full of additional judgments. You know, there is the original situation, and then there's all of the stories that our mind is telling. And then there's the emotions that build upon those stories. And so we can really get stuck in this spiral of emotions and thought feelings and thoughts and all of these things that go far, far beyond what that original uncomfortable experience was. And so one of the tricks that I would say to circumvent all of this storytelling, and again, this is going to be an easier said than done sort of thing, so I can elaborate on some possible methods of getting this done to give you some practical ideas, but it's really staying here in this now moment and really being with whatever is actually happening in this moment. You know, we talk about ruminating thoughts from the past. That is what causes us to think depressive thoughts, right? We're critical about things that have already happened. And by ruminating on them and thinking about them, we actually just cause ourselves more suffering here and now, far more than we would have needed to if we had, you know, really gone through the situation in the first place and become free of it, right? Not telling these stories, not carrying them with us, not letting our identity be altered by those past situations, right? So this is taking yourself out of like the victim mentality, which is, I will sidebar here to say, if bad things have happened to you and you are a victim of some sort of abuse, it is not your fault. Nobody deserves to be mistreated. And ultimately, at the end of the day, you are the only one who has the power to move forward, to become victorious in your story, rather than hanging on to any victim mentalities that keep you stuck in the loop, in the story, in the judgments, in the identity that you may have taken on from those unpleasant or uncomfortable circumstances. And then on the flip side, we do this thing too, where we worry about what potential uncomfortable or unpleasant circumstances might happen, right, in the future. And that's where we get anxiety. And the truth is, with this one, it's our thoughts. I had this realization one day when I woke up feeling super overwhelmed. My to-do list was a mile long. And immediately upon waking up, my mind was just going, going, going. And I felt the weight of the overwhelm. And I just sat with it. And what I realized was it was my own thoughts that were causing me the overwhelm. There was actually nothing in my situation. There was nothing presently happening to make me feel anxious or overwhelmed. It was me doing it to myself all along. And so if you struggle with either of these things, either ruminating over past circumstances that are making you feel crummy, or worrying about what might happen or what might not happen in the future, also making you feel crummy, the solution is the same. And it's to come into this present moment here and now with your thoughts, with your emotions, with all of your being, and just experience what is actually happening before you. Now, there are a couple of ways to do this, and there are probably thousands of modalities in the world that are different routes to get to this place. But ultimately, it is a retraining of your brain to focus on what is right here in front of you rather than allowing it to go on autopilot. This is essentially shifting away from the survival response that is innate within us to react and deal with something, right? That initial emotion or thought comes up, and then we build on it. And this often happens on autopilot, and our brains are so efficient, like, yay, brains, so grateful that you have this all unlocked. It pulls all of the information from our past, it pulls every experience, every memory, and not at all in a conscious way, in a way that you completely have no clue that this is what's happening. But your brain has this filter called the reticular activating system that filters down based on all of your past experiences to help you to see what it believes you want to see. What does it believe you want to see? More of the same, more of what's familiar, more of what's quote unquote safe, right? So it shows you what you're looking for. So to tie this back to your first question, if you want to find more things to be happy about, you know, start by looking for more things to be happy about. And that's where you're going to experience them and see them all over the place. And on the other hand, the example is used often, don't think about a purple elephant. Well, what did you do? You just thought about the purple elephant. So the things that you don't want to experience more of and don't want to have in your thoughts, you've got to be really intentional about shifting away from that, right? You can't tell yourself, don't think about this thing. You've got to actually replace it with something else so that you can shift your thoughts and think in a more, you know, in a more positive vein. And this isn't about bypassing, because in this moment, you are likely experiencing emotions. And that is normal. That's part of being a human. That's part of living in this meat suit and your human experience. And so we don't want to bypass them. But what we often do, like I touched on earlier, is resist them. We resist the uncomfortable emotions. We don't want that. So we do everything in our power to stuff them away and not feel them. And or we cling to them. If they're amazing, we often will cling to the feeling of joy or happiness or, you know, being elated or whatever the case may be. And it's this attachment that actually, you know, it's our preference. And that's okay, because we're humans, we have preferences, and things feel good, and we want more of the things that feel good, and things that feel bad, we want less of that. So that's very natural. But if we can come to a space where we're not so attached to those outcomes and can simply be present with ourselves in this now moment, we will find freedom from most of the world's suffering. And it's not to say that it all goes away and everything's perfect. It's far from it. But what happens is you are well equipped to respond to the chaos around you. And that's where everything starts to shift.
Well, all right. Everything that you said is 100% correct. That's, I mean, summed up everything in about a 5-minute little rant, which is amazing. People can go back and rewind that, because there's a lot of different pieces, a lot of different threads that we can pull on. And first thing is one that you said, right? You mentioned that it's about replacing, right? It's not enough to just say, like, I don't want to think negative thoughts. We actually have to replace them, because yeah, it's easy for that stuff to float in. And that's where gratitude comes in, right? That's why people talk about having a gratitude practice. It's training your brain to see that positive stuff. And that's why I love that as one of the easiest action steps that people can take to start changing their lives. But something that you mentioned is that we cling to what's in the past and we ruminate on that a lot. And I think that most people will logically realize why that's not super helpful. They'll go, okay, like, of course I can't change the past, but I have to think about that so that I can stop myself from making those mistakes again in the future. That's what, you know, a lot of people who live in that anxiety will say. It's like, well, I can't just forget about the past. I have to critique myself, judge myself, learn from myself. Otherwise, I'm going to catch myself next time making those same mistakes and staying in the same pattern. So how do we get out of that loop where, yes, it's not ideal to focus on the past because we can't change it, but we want to do better in the future?
Absolutely. And I have, I think, what the missing link is here. And this is something I talk about often, because I feel like it's this tiny missing link that has people kind of going all over the place with these ideas of, if I'm not, you know, if I don't feel guilty about the things that I did wrong, how am I going to change and become a better person? And so we get into this loop, like you said, where we feel like we have to beat ourselves up in order to make positive change. And I'll tell you what the truth is. I know you know this. I know if you've been out there, you've tried this, you know, this does not freaking work. It doesn't work. And so what happens is you feel shitty, and you still feel like you're not good enough. And it keeps you in this loop of feeling shitty and not good enough and shitty and not good enough. And you've got this story and you've got this idea and your identity is built upon it. And now you're like, maybe I'm a shitty person. And so it just escalates into, well, frankly, not helpful or productive thought patterns. And in my book, Unstuck for Women, which honestly it could be for males too, I just market it towards women. I have actually had some male readers find that the information was really useful for them as well. But I share about some of the tools that you can use to stop from getting sucked into the spiral. And I'll give you a couple of examples of them, but I think I have 40 or 50 different things in there. But I'm going to say probably the most commonly used one that I've seen is a meditation practice. And I will elaborate on that to say that meditation practice does not need to look like what you probably think it needs to look like. It does not mean sitting in silence and chanting for hours on end. It does not need to look that way. We all start somewhere differently. And actually, if you're not a pro meditator, if I can throw this in there, I have this amazing series of less than 5 minute sweary meditations that are just what you might need to get your mind on board with just sitting with yourself. And so this is intended to bring out some emotions, some laughter, some enjoyment to help you to focus your mind in on just creating that time and space for yourself. And the more that we practice this, the more we're able to create that space between that initial reaction, which when you're really living in it, doesn't feel like a choice, like kind of what you alluded to, like you're stuck in it and you feel like, well, I don't have any other choice. I need to take this information and I need to learn from it and I need to take it with me. But the truth is that often leads to a lot of suffering, and there's a way to do this that is not so painful. And so the missing link, I believe, is self-compassion. And I think that so much of the world has been, you know, guided down this path of like, well, self-care is selfish and, you know, vulnerability is weakness. And if you, you know, if you're not growing, then you're dying. And so they're also extreme. And I think that nothing is quite as black and white as most people make things out to be. I am a big thinker. I think in terms of both and rather than either or. So yes, some of these things are true in certain circumstances, but not in every circumstance. And I think that if we were to be gentle with ourselves, to give ourselves that love and that compassion that we've actually been seeking and chasing out in the world, and the happiness and the success and all of these things, bring them inside. They are an inside job. And when we do that, when we can give ourselves grace for the mistakes that we've made, we don't need to carry guilt about it. We don't need to shame ourselves. We don't need to trash talk ourselves and say, like, you jerk, you better straighten up and do this thing. You say, wow, I really messed up. How can I make this right? And then you can move forward. And I think truly internalizing that lesson, because I feel like when we're in the guilt and the shame, we're actually resisting the lesson, because what's happening there is we're making ourselves bad or wrong in some way. And so we actually can end up carrying that with us for so much longer than we need to. The truth is the lesson is right there in the experience. We don't need to keep circling around and carrying it and drawing it out and pulling new threads from it. We can simply learn, give ourselves compassion, because we're human. You know, we're perfectly imperfect. We're gonna make mistakes. You know, that's where the phrase fuck around and find out came from. We're humans. So we're gonna learn as we go. And the sooner you can embrace this idea that we're going to learn as we go, and that that's part of the human experience, the more freedom you're gonna have from any of that unnecessary suffering.
It's interesting. You mentioned unnecessary suffering there, and that it reminds me, it's the parable of the two arrows. You know, that Buddha said that suffering is like when you get struck with two arrows, and the first arrow is the suffering that you couldn't avoid. That was the thing happening. And then the second arrow is all of the stuff that you attach to it. It's the stories that you tell, and the rumination, and the wanting that for it to be different, and everything that's within your control that comes after the thing that was unavoidable. And we can't avoid the first one, obviously, but it's the second one that lasts so much longer, and where most human suffering comes from. And, you know, one of the things that we all struggle with the most, and you just brought up your book, is just feeling stuck. So I'm curious, when you wrote that book, when you teach about becoming unstuck, what does that entail? Where do we get stuck? Is it the same for everyone? Is it different? And how do we start to work ourselves out of that?
Well, I think as I'm a both and thinker, I think it's that we often share so many struggles with so many other people, and we are uniquely who we are with the unique experiences that we have individually had that led up to this now moment. No one on the planet out of 8 billion people has had the experiences, all of them, that I have. But if we look at the individual experience level, absolutely someone has dealt with something very similar to each of the individual experiences I had. So we are all connected in that way, and we're not alone. And so I think this is what gave me great hope when I was feeling so stuck. You know, I was feeling very stuck in a relationship that wasn't working. And this is where I sort of had some of these realizations that went into writing my book, Unstuck, because I felt stuck. And I'll say on a general level, like the level that most people would relate to, I just felt like there was something more. Like this couldn't be all there is. Like there's just felt like there was something missing, some like oomph or some zhuzhing, or just there was something niggling in the back of my mind that said like, this can't be it. Like if this is the purpose of life, then this something's falling short. And I think that most people can relate to that sense of stuckness. Like there's got to be something more and I don't know how to access it. So whether that be a lack of confidence or a lack of resources, either way, the responsibility is on you to find the resources and the tools so that you can help yourself. This is what this is all about. Nobody can do it for you. And unfortunately, I don't know about you, but I have tried to change a person or two that wasn't me, I mean, in the past. And it doesn't take long to figure out that if they don't want to change, they're not changing. So the truth is, this is about you taking radical responsibility for changing you. And so when you're stuck, it might feel like you don't have any power, like you don't have any choice, like you don't have any control, just like you're just there and just things are happening around you and you wish that you could control them. But the problem with that is actually that you're looking at things you can't control and wishing you can control them. And you're missing, as I did, the fact that the thing that I control is me. And so by really shifting this, by really taking radical responsibility, I was able to change my experience, my relationships, and, you know, my overall happiness and success in life. And that's, you know, life is short. We're here to have fun. We're here to have an amazing, happy, blissful experience that feels really good to us. And that's going to be different from one person to another. And I can say from a specific level, things that I personally felt, I woke up feeling overwhelmed and anxious. I felt uncertain about my relationships. I wasn't sure how that was going to go or how I was going to be received that day. I worried about what would happen or what wouldn't happen. I would wake up in the night and not be able to fall back asleep with just my to-do list ruminating through my mind. And I remember at that time, I had really felt like I had lost myself. And I think a lot of people, whether they switch careers or have a family or move, will experience something along these lines where the old version of you is no longer accessible. For me, when I had my children, I realized like, okay, like I'm not the same person I was before I had children. I'm forever changed. And I kind of lost track. Like, I don't know who I am, right? I kind of got sucked into, I call it just a momitis, where I knew I was a mom and that was like my main priority. But like, who was Christy outside of that? I didn't know. And so these are some of the common things that maybe people are experiencing, just feeling like there's got to be something more. And like, this isn't fun. And I see people having fun and loving life and creating a life that they love. And I just don't know how that's going to play out for me. And so that's the people I want to reach here, because you always have possibility. And the more that you believe in that choice and that possibility and start taking action, the more it will happen. And the momentum just will build from there.
Yeah, it's funny. People listening can't see, but I'm like laughing the whole time you're talking. And we just met before we started recording, so I don't want you to think that I'm laughing at you. It's because we're so similar. I mean, down to the literal specific word choices that you use, like both and, not either or, but both and, you know, the running away from expectations and just literally everything that you're saying. I mean, people who listen to the show, it sounds like it's me talking. So it's just interesting. It's just interesting to hear. But something that you just brought up that I clearly haven't experienced is just a momitis. I like how you phrase that, because obviously I can't relate to that specifically, but I do think I'm just a whatever itis, just my job itis, just a son, whatever it is. So
yeah.
What are some of the steps that you took when you found yourself in that place of like, whoa, I don't even know who Christy is. I've lost myself in my responsibilities, in my duties, in my jobs, in the day-to-day of the realities of life, as you put it, piloting this meat suit, because there are responsibilities that we have. We do have to show up for our kids, for our spouse, for our job, our subordinates, our bosses, whatever it is. So how did you start to dig yourself out of that?
Well, before I share about what I'm going to call loosely here, a healing journey, because I think people will kind of understand that word, but I also interpret that just a little bit differently, because the way I see it, you're not broken. You don't need fixing, and there's no voids that you need to fill. The truth is you are already whole. And my perspective on healing is actually more of a remembrance of your wholeness. And then this ability to live, to create, to experience out of this place of wholeness. And so when I was stuck, I felt like there was something missing. I felt like, you know, there was something more. There was parts of me that didn't feel fulfilled. There was also parts of me that I had been hiding. I was a master people pleaser, queen of people pleasing, if you will. I was a struggling perfectionist, and struggling because perfection isn't freaking real. It's an illusion that so many people chase, myself included. And I spent a lot of time chasing that mirage, and only to discover it kept running away. And so I never actually got there. And so finally I was like, well, this is kind of a waste of time and energy to be chasing this perfection illusion and the people pleasing and the mask wearing. And I realized that the more I was trying, the more I was attempting to be what other people wanted me to be, the more I was outsourcing, the more I was, you know, just operating from this place of brokenness and not wholeness, the more I realized I was outsourcing what couldn't be outsourced. And because I'm already whole, the moment that I stepped into that power of living like I'm a whole person, everything shifted, because I no longer needed the validation from people outside of me. I knew I was already whole. I no longer needed someone else to tell me that I was valuable or appreciated, although that's nice. That's very nice to hear that feedback from the world around you. But to be reliant on it is a slippery slope, right? Because now we're outsourcing a part of us. It's essentially just operating from this space of lack, this space of not wholeness. And anything that we're doing operating out of that space is going to, guess what, produce more lack and more ideas and feelings that we're missing or broken or need fixing. And so some of the practices that I use, you already touched on gratitude. I actually combined the practices that I use into my Unstuck Daily Self-Discovery Journal, because I would say that the path to getting unstuck and to discovering your wholeness is a path of learning who you are. It is about tapping into your essence, to your being, to asking yourself the questions. Most of us have gone through life and we honestly haven't asked enough questions. Education system has shut us down from asking too many questions. You're supposed to just believe that this is what it is, and you're supposed to fit in the box, and you're supposed to behave and obey and do the things. And so we've spent our lives doing the things to fit into the box, to fit into the mold, so people will like us, so people will appreciate us, so that we can get a good job, so that we can survive, so that we have value in this world. And it's all focused on the external and misses what's already within you. And this wholeness is such a huge part. So inside this daily self-discovery journal, it is daily questions for you to dive deep within who you are, to discover your values, your beliefs, tweak them if they're not working for you, and find new beliefs that actually support the life that you want to create. It is daily insights to just give you ideas to try on, because I'm a big fan of trying things on. If this belief isn't working for you, try on this belief. What if you're already worthy? What if you're already more than good enough? How would you act? How would you behave differently, knowing that you're already good enough? I bet the outcome would be a lot different. And if we can get ourselves out of the blame and the shame and into radical responsibility, we actually are going to be standing in our power, which gives us the ability to change our experience. And ultimately, at the end of the day, that's what we're seeking. When we're uncomfortable, when we're stuck, we want to have a different experience. And so instead of outsourcing that, we want to take that on board because we are the only one that can change that. And so the daily insights, the daily questions to really get to know yourself and to try on these different perspectives, beliefs, ideas, values, along with intention setting and gratitude practice and celebration. Because oftentimes we look back, but we look at the crappy things. We look at the things that we need to change and improve, and we don't take enough time to celebrate our successes. And if we focused on the successes, guess what? We're going to see more successes. And tied to that, we want to make sure that we're defining success on our own terms, right? Because the world has given us a lot of definitions of what success can and should look like, but we're all different. So we've got to figure out what that success truly looks like for us if we're about to have true success. Like, nobody wants to arrive at quote unquote success and be like, well, this sucks. I actually hate this. Like, this does not feel like success at all.
Yeah, there's a lot there again. I talk about a lot of these same things, right? People who are listening, I have an episode on called Celebrating Small Wins, right? I think that's extremely important. You have to train your brain to look for the positives, and celebrating small wins is a part of that. I also have a whole series I did on self-sabotage, and I talk about what I consider the five human tendencies that are that lead to self-sabotage. And it's an acronym I created called SLUMP, S-L-U-M-P. And the S are shoulds and supposed tos. The L is lacking clarity. So not knowing where you're going, right? Start with the end in mind. You don't end up at a destination you don't set out for. P is perfectionism. So again, we're speaking the same language here. And it's interesting that you kind of, right in the beginning there, you mentioned that the way you got out of being stuck where you were started with accepting where you were. Right. It's this paradox of that the way to move forward is by being okay with exactly where you are. And
it isn't it frustrating, because that's the last thing we want to do when we're there. We just want to get rid of that place.
Right. And you know, Byron Katie is a author and a speaker who talks about this stuff a lot. And she has a book called Loving What Is. And the basic principle is that you have to not only be okay with the way things are, you actually have to learn to love it. And the reason I think this is so powerful is because it is, right? People will go, well, how am I supposed to love what is? I don't like where I am. But that goes to what you were speaking about in the first few minutes, which is this disconnect between reality and what is, right? I call this arguing with reality. It's like, it doesn't matter if you love it or you hate it, because it is. So if that's how things are, you might as well love it. You might as well just say, like, I embrace myself. I love myself, because you can change it in the future, but right now it is the way that it is. So this is the hardest thing for people to wrestle with, because it's like, well, but I don't, like, I want it to be different. So how can I love it? And it's like, you have to be able to hold these two conflicting views. And that's a very challenging thing for people. But as you've said multiple times, it's not either or, it's both. And I can want to be better. I can want more for myself. I can want to be in a different place in the future, but I have to accept, respect, and yes, love the fact that I am where I am right now. I am, you know, for better or for worse, everything, as you said, everything that's happened to me in my life has conspired to land me exactly where I am right now. And wanting it to be different can't have made it so, because I am where I am right now, right? It doesn't matter.
And yes, you're arguing with what is, and what a futile effort that is, because it is already, and you can't change it. What a circle you get yourself really into.
And this is, again, this is a paradox. It's hard. And this is where, you know, Buddhist monks will sit on a mountaintop and meditate on this for their entire lives. So this is, you know, another phrase you mentioned a few times is easier said than done. And that is the long and short of this. This is the deep stuff. And this is the stuff that when we bump up against it, we want to just bury our heads in the sand or just turn away from it, because it's easier just to say, I'm too busy for this. I'm too tired for this. This isn't that, you know, that I can't, I don't have the bandwidth for this, or whatever it is. So I think it's so great that you have created these tools, your book, your journal, which I have linked in the show notes for anyone listening, people who want to, you know, go through that process with Christy. You can go and pick up her Unstuck journal or her Unstuck book and read what's going on. But you know, you've dropped a lot of bombs in this episode, right? This is going to be one that I think people are going to need to re-listen to. And
I have one more I would like to share. Okay. Just I can't let go of it. And I just want to share a slightly different take on self-sabotage. And sure. I love your slump thing. That's amazing. But in my experience, I actually no longer see self-sabotage as sabotage, because to me, that means like we're getting in our own way, that we're doing something on purpose that is blocking us from having the thing. And it's probably semantics around the word sabotage. It sounds intentional. And so I just like to flip that on its head, because I actually think it's more of a self-preservation when we are doing these things, because it is about protection. And protection means staying safe in the familiar, right? Just staying here because this is quote unquote comfortable, in my comfort zone, even though maybe it sucks, maybe it's awful, maybe I wish very desperately to change it, but yet it's known. And the other option is not. The other option is uncertain. And that creates, can create some emotions in our body, which you may go ahead and interpret as one of two things. One is fear, or the other is excitement. And so depending on which way you label that sensation in your body, you're going to react quite differently. So again, being aware that when faced with a challenging option to change or to grow or to expand or have a different experience than you're used to, knowing that your mind is likely going to pop up. I call it in my book, the asshole mind. It's literally there to protect you and keep you safe, and it will do so at all costs. Meaning you might stay stuck just because the unfamiliar is uncertain. And your entire system, your entire body, your reticular activating system, all of it's working together to keep you safe and protected so you don't die, right? This is like your ego mechanism. Don't die. And by the way, the ego thinks like pretty much everything is death, right? It's like programmed like olden times when like literally everything was a threat. And now we're actually mostly very safe. So to be honest, if you're sitting and listening to a podcast right now, you're probably safe enough, you know, that these safety mechanisms, this self-sabotage, if you will, getting in your way is actually just your body doing its job. You're not actually in danger. And so when you can say, thank you, my ego, thank you, brain, for keeping me safe and protected, that worked for a time. And now I'm going to do this new thing because I'm ready to grow and expand and move past that. And so we can move out of self-preservation and into the endless field of possibilities, right? Where all of the things that are uncertain become a possibility. And honestly, it's just a really fun place to play. And we're here to have an experience. We are, I believe, the all that is having this unique human experience through our senses, through our touch and our smell and our taste and our feeling and our all of the things that we're able to do. And so why not make that experience as fun as possible, as enjoyable as possible? That is your intended state. You're not here to suffer and struggle and have difficulties. And by staying in the now moment, by really taking radical responsibility for yourself and your choices, you can change all of it. Well, maybe not like your height. I've been working on that for a while and I'm still 5'2". So
yeah, I love that distinction between self-sabotage and preservation. And yeah. I totally agree, right? Everything that you do ever is
from that lens.
It's within your own best interest at heart. So all self-sabotage is just your brain trying to keep you safe, but it's operating from a faulty place. I used this analogy the other day. It's like if you're trying to plug in your PS5 or something like that to one of those old tube TVs, or you're trying to play Spotify on like a record player. Like it's just, you're using new software on an outdated machine. And that's your brain is trying to keep you safe. So it will try to conserve energy and survive. But as you said, we are in a place where survival isn't that way anymore. We are probably going to survive, but we have what I call evolutionary mismatch. And what we've evolved to do has been outpaced by the progress of our society over the last 50 years because of technology and because of a lot of other things that are going on. So that just sets us up for a lot of discomfort. And that's the thing, is that discomfort, that struggle, that suffering, that's all part of it already, right? Like growth comes from struggle. Right. If you understand how muscles work, right, everyone knows you got to tear down the muscle so it gets built back stronger. And, you know, whatever analogy you want to use, your body is an adaptation machine. Your body is also an energy saving machine. Your body will only adapt if it will help to be better at energy conservation. So that's why when your muscles break down, they build back stronger. Because if your muscle breaks down, your brain goes, oh, okay, this was hard. I need to build that muscle back up stronger so that the next time I face this problem, I can be better equipped to solve it. That means if you don't get to the struggle part, your brain goes, okay, I'm already equipped to solve this thing. I do not need to grow. I'm not going to waste any of my energy, my resources on making myself better. So it is not that struggle or discomfort is a flaw in the system. It is literally the part in the system that you need to go through to create that growth. Now, that being said, you don't need to make it harder than it already is.
Right.
Because life is already hard. All of this stuff is already hard. So the judgment, the shoulds, all of these things that we throw on top of it, again, that's the second arrow that comes back and adds more on top of what's already challenging. And so something that you've used this phrase a few times, and I feel like I know what you mean, but I would love for you to go into a little bit and explain the concept of radical responsibility, because you've said that a few times. And I think that for some people it might be obvious, but I'd love for you to explain what you mean by it and why you think that's so important.
Absolutely. Now, I think that this is just ultimately kind of coming back to like locus of control here. Okay. Because oftentimes we are, again, outsourcing, you know, things that are not meant to be outsourced. And we look to people around us or circumstances around us to change and shift. But we're missing this key element that we have the power to change our experience, to change, you know, ourselves, to change the relationships we have with people, to change the world around us simply by focusing on what we can change ourselves. We've talked about it a couple times in the conversation about how if we are trying to change or, you know, resist what is, that's a waste of energy. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of energy. It's not productive. It doesn't come up with creative solutions. What that does, it actually serves to keep you stuck in the loop because you're focused on the problem. But we want to be solution seekers. We want to be conscious creators. So we want to take the things that we can control and do something with that. Now, I will also clarify that this taking radical responsibility for yourself also means recognizing where your responsibility ends, right? Because recognizing that you are not responsible to make other people happy, you are not responsible for their opinions, their actions, their beliefs, all of these things. And this is especially a slippery slope for parents because we do feel like we're very responsible for our little people. But the truth is, the more you try to control them, the more you will realize you're not in control at all. They are their own human beings. And the same is with adults. And in fact, you know, the more I go down this parenting road, my kids are teens now. I have 14 boys here. It's chaos. But the more that we try to shape them, the more resistant they are. It's like, I'm trying to think of the phrase that Gabor Mate used, and it was, I think it was counter, what the heck was the exact word? It's failing me right now. Anyways, it was like this resistance to like someone trying to help you. And obviously that's literally children's jobs and teenagers' jobs to resist. They're trying things on for themselves. So the more insistent we try to be, you know, you see parents all the time trying to control their children, and it's a lot of fear-based kind of stuff because you can't change another person. You can make it look like you're maybe getting them to agree, comply with you, right? Out of fear, potentially, out of what you might call respect. But listen, if you're coercing someone out of fear to respect you, that's not respect any longer. But that's another conversation for another day. I just think that the more we can take responsibility for the things that we can actually make a difference with, that's us and not someone else, the better off we will be. And if we all did this, if we all took responsibility for ourselves, for our own happiness, for our joy, for our peace, for creating love within ourselves, this would just overflow and the world would be a much better place.
I can't disagree with that. I think that, you know, again, as you've summed it up since the beginning, it all starts from within. And this is my whole thing. You know, they say a rising tide raises all ships, and people ask me a lot. I do a lot of other people's podcasts and things like that. And one of the things they always ask me is like, you know, what do you want to do? What's your mission? What's your goal? There's that exercise that a lot of coaches will do where it's like, write your eulogy, right? How do you want to be remembered, right? What, you know, when it's all said and done, you know, write your eulogy as if you just passed away and all the things you want people to say about you. And I was at a men's retreat where I was speaking a couple months ago and I was taking part in it as well. And that was one of the activities and everyone had these long drawn out things. And mine was just one sentence. And it's just like, I lived my life well. That's all I care about, because if I live my life well, then I know that I did my best. And if everyone did that, then everyone did their best. And then that's how the world becomes the best possible world. We overcomplicate things so much. It's just like, we need to worry about other people to an extent, but you can't control any other person. You can't control the market. You can't control the economy. You can't control the president or this or that or the other thing. All you can control is yourself, and barely that. Right. Because I can't control
at times. For right, sure. Exactly.
I can't control my intrusive thoughts. I can't control when I'm tired or when I have energy. So like even us, we think we can control, but we really can't. So it's like just there's so much that once you put on blinders and realize there's so little that we can control. And if we can just focus on that, it frees up so much energy, so much attention, so much extra stuff. And then you can take responsibility over just that, rather than trying to be responsible for all of the things outside of your outside of your direct control. And that's when we really start to see everyone be able to shine, because with all of that extra energy and attention that we're putting on the right things, we're not squandering it. And now we're actually moving forward, and everyone doing that together is where the world starts to look very differently. So I appreciate you giving all that, Christy. All of this again has been super fun for me. And the last question that I have for you is the same question that I ask every guest, which is, if you had one action step that you could give listeners that they could start doing right now, today, as soon as this episode ends, as soon as they take their headphones out of their ears, to start living a happier, healthier life, what would it be?
Oh, one action step. I'm going to give you a sort of a broad action step. So I can give elaborations, but oh, because one action step seems very limited. And as we've discussed, I'm a both end thinker. So that's too small. I will say, choose love in any opportunity where you have a choice, and you always have a choice. So let's remember that even when it feels like you don't have a choice, you have a choice. It just might not be the choice you want, but you have a choice to choose between fear and love. And if you choose love every single time, your life will be transformed from the inside out. Now, choosing love might be taking a deep breath, right? So that you can respond in a loving way. It might be removing yourself from a situation. It might be showing up for a situation. But in each now moment, when you have this opportunity, if you choose love every single time, or at least, you know, 80-20 or something like that, if you can try and consciously choose love as often as humanly possible, you are going to have a very different experience of this life on earth.
I love that. And I think that that is actionable and very well said. So I appreciate that. I think that's great. And the last thing, Christy, before I let you go, I have all of your links for your book, for your journal, for all your social medias in the show notes. But if people want to get in contact with you, where's the best place for them to find you? What should they do next if they want to, you know, learn more about Christy?
Yeah, I have a ton of freebies, which I think we're putting a couple of them at least in the show notes below. And you can find those on my website as well. Pretty much my website is a hub for all of the things. You can find links for the book and for my podcast, Create Your Happy, for my freebies, for my courses, for my offers. All of the goodies are all on my website. And if you want to connect on a more personal basis, I love new friends and I hang out mostly on Facebook, but you'll also find me on pretty well all of the platforms. I just don't hang out on all of them nearly as much as I hang out on Facebook.
Amazing. Yeah. And again, for anyone listening, all that stuff, all the information, Christy's website, the books, the podcast are all right there. Click on it, go connect with her, check her out. Christy, thank you so much for being here. This was really enjoyable. I had a great time.
that's all for this week. Be sure to subscribe and follow the show so you don't miss a beat. Support the show by sending this episode to a friend or leaving a rating and review on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. Stay happy, stay healthy.